Case number 13-1230, CXX Transportation, Inc. et al. Petitioners v. Surface Transportation Board et al. Mr. Motes for the petitioners, Mr. Light for the respondents.
Good morning, Judge Dale, Judge Silverman, Judge Santel. May it please the court. My name is Paul Motes. I'm representing here this morning jointly, joint appeal, CSX Transportation and Norfolk Southern Railway Company. We are appealing four specific portions of an STB rulemaking proceeding that the board called rate regulatory reforms. Given our view of what they've done, I think it's a classic example of somebody's reform is somebody else's troubling change, perhaps unsupported change. Specifically, the four changes we are going to address are, first, the complete removal of damages caps, limits on relief for rate cases brought under the so-called simplified standalone cost methodology. As to that issue, I respectfully submit we should win under both Chevron point one and Chevron point two. The second issue is the board increased the damages cap, the limit of recovery for rate cases brought under the so-called 3-benchmark or 3B methodology, which this court has previously described as the antithesis of mathematical certainty. It increased those caps from $1 million to $4 million. It adopted a new revenue allocation rule that Judge Santel is very familiar with for so-called crossover traffic.
Doesn't mean I can call it up in a moment.
It's fairly recent, Your Honor. I'll help you call it back up. This revenue allocation rule is used in standalone and simplified standalone cases for so-called crossover traffic, traffic that is carried part of the way on this hypothetical standalone railroad, part of the way on the incumbent real-world railroad, and there has to be a methodology for allocating the revenues between those two in these cases. And the fourth issue we raise has to do with something that happens if you lose a rate case, namely the board has the power to require reparations, damages, if you will, and it adopted a new interest rate for such circumstances. We submit without any consideration at all of significant railroad comments, our comments, that explain the false premise that the board relied upon for making this change. Now, if I may, first with respect to the removal of the damages caps for SSAC or simplified standalone cases, and I'm sorry if I use short forms, and I know we're all admonished and asked to refile our briefs.
Yeah, you understand we have cases involving a plethora of agencies and regulatory schemes.
I do, Your Honor.
Attorneys who come in here very often practice in one area, and they have a jargon that is perfectly understandable to the people who practice in that area. But for us to try to retain immediate recall for all the agencies from...
Well, guilty as charged, and if I slip over, I'm sure you'll ask me to restate what I have referred to. This first change is...
Incidentally, in that respect, your law firm has some of the best appellate lawyers in the country, I mean, Carter Phillips and Peter Keisler. And perhaps one, as Judge Santel suggests, if you're a specialist in one area, you become too imbued with the jargon of that. And you might suggest that you go to one of your other partners who's more versed in appellate argument across the board and see whether they understand your brief.
That's an excellent suggestion, Judge Silverman. Mr. Phillips isn't in the hall, or Mr. Keisler, but I take your point, and I'd be happy to have them look at our briefs anytime. Again, though, this first change is a radical and an important change. When the STB first adopted these simplifying assumptions for standalone costs, which is, if you will, the gold standard for determining the reasonableness of railroad rates, and the board has referred to it as the mechanism and the methodology that should always be used. This court has recognized repeatedly that full standalone cost is the correct methodology for considering the reasonableness of railroad rates. But in 1995, when Congress enacted the ICTA, the Interstate Commerce Commission Termination Act, it included a provision in Section 10701D3 Title 49, instructing the board to hurry up and finish what the board had been trying to do for many, many years, namely to, through rulemaking, to generate a simplified methodology, a simplified standalone cost methodology, and this is the critical point, to establish a simplified and expedited method for determining the reasonableness of challenged rail rates in those cases in which a full standalone cost presentation is too costly given the value of the case. That's critical. The board had found, and Congress knew.
And the board did that, right? Mm-hmm.
The board did do that.
And your theory is that that statute not only required that, but locked in
yes.
full SAC for high-value cases.
Congress that's knew exactly. Sorry, Judge. No.
That's your theory, right?
That is a theory.
That's
Congress,
the way
Congress knew exactly what full standalone cost was, and it made a point of saying that it did not want this new methodology the board was going to come up with.
You didn't say that. You didn't quite say that.
Well.
Your whole theory is expresso unius.
Surplusage and expressio unius, and I think that
what's the surplusage?
The surplusage is by their taking that phrase in those cases in which a full standalone cost presentation is too costly given the value of the case. Congress was telling the board, don't undermine full standalone cost. You adopt a simplified methodology. You're only to use it.
Why didn't they say that then? If that's what Congress was wanting to tell us, Congress is capable of saying things like that.
Well, I would submit to you, since that's what they were trying to say here. Maybe they could have been clearer. Maybe they will have
to. Why didn't they then? That's what they were trying to do.
There was a lot of evidence before the board and the rulemakings, and Congress was aware of it, that the full standalone cost cases have become very expensive. And we agree, they are. The board said back in 1996 they were costing at least $5 million.
What does that statute say about full standalone cost?
It says what I just read. It says that it does not say the full standalone cost.
That's exactly right. It does not say what
it does not say that it is.
You did not read that out of the
statute. No.
Suppose the board gets really sophisticated and comes up with a non-full SAC sort of, but not simplified, a different system that's just as accurate as full SAC. They can't use it for high-value cases?
They have come up with the so-called simplified standalone methodology.
Your point is that that's not as effective. It builds inaccuracies and imprecision
Correct.
Into the process. But suppose it didn't. Suppose they came up with a methodology that was much cheaper but just as accurate as full SAC. Under your theory, they couldn't use it.
I don't know what that methodology cases. Would be.
Well, you don't have to know it. I have your hypothetical.
Yeah.
Yes,
your theory. Your theory is that this locks full SAC in. And I'm asking you what sense that makes, given the fact that in my hypothetical situation.
If your hypothetical were the real world, I would agree with you. I know of no such methodology.
Well, but that's why I asked the hypothetical.
Right.
So it can't be that it can't be then that that this language locks in full standalone cost methodology.
Full standalone.
Because you agree that if that it couldn't possibly do that if the board came up with an equally effective, less expensive methodology. And if you admit that, then the statute can't say what you said it says.
Very well, but the board has not come up with such a methodology, and I've never heard of one. The board spent 8 years in various rulemakings and came to this court 2 or 3 different times trying to come up with methodologies other than full SAC that would satisfy the statute that this court would say was appropriate under the statute. It kept trying. It finally came up with this simplified standalone cost test, which
you're basing your argument on Congress having said that they can't use a simplified method for anything except those who fit certain cost criteria. You're being asked if that makes any sense to say that in a statute. If Congress would have said, look, if you come up with a good simplified method, you can't use it for anything else. They didn't say that, did they?
No, they didn't.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. Yeah,
well, you don't get there in Chevron 1, certainly, do you?
Well, I tried. Now let's go to Chevron 2.
Okay.
It's what they have done here is completely at odds with Congress's and the board's own longstanding recognition that full SAC is the most economically accurate and defensible standard for determining maximum reasonable rates. They have instead said their so-called small claims model, which is how the board referred to their simplified standalone methodology originally, and the phrase was picked up by this court, the so-called small claims model has now become all claims no matter how large. Full SAC will have no meaning if this stands because everyone will invoke the simplified standalone cost model for which the filing fees are much less, for which the burdens on the railroads that produce information in the so-called second disclosure, discovery, the information needed to, if you will, for them to make their case, is much more favorable to the shippers.
Now, those arguments were made by the amicus, right? You didn't make that argument in your brief, did you?
I'm sorry? Yes.
You did?
I believe so, yes.
I mean, you did argue at the end of your statutory section that this introduces imprecision.
Correct.
But it was the amicus that argued about gamesmanship and discovery costs.
Well, that point is made in the AAR's amicus brief.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We made the point ourselves in our comments below. You're right.
I'm talking about here.
Okay, here it's in the AAR amicus
brief. Right, but not in your brief. Right.
I think you're right.
Okay.
Although that's the underlying concern you have, which is sort of strange. You didn't raise it. But that is your underlying concern, isn't it?
Well, we certainly raised it before the board.
But no,
yeah,
but not here.
Raised it here for us to hear it.
In fact, I think it's sort of interesting. Your entire arbitrary and capricious argument is a paragraph at the end of your section about the statutory interpretation.
It is. So, and yeah. We believe, well, you seem not to be agreeing with me, but I think that the language at the end of 1071D3 is rendered surplusage by the board's interpretation. Basically, mm-hmm. What is left, what kind of a standard do we have for a rate reasonableness case in which a full standalone cost presentation would not be too costly? That's what the board has always leaned toward and
can
looked toward.
Can we posit that the full standalone cost would always be so much less favorable to the applicant that they would always wish to use the most sympathetic one?
We don't really know that because there haven't been.
Unless we can do that, then we can't make it surplusage. We can't call it surplusage, can we? Okay, your point on surplusage is nobody will use the other method anymore.
My
right?
point on surplusage is the board has effectively written that phrase out of the statute.
Okay.
Counsel, let me go. Your time is sort of getting short. I'd like one question I would ask about the third argument that you make. Objecting to the prime rate. Did you ever suggest a rate that you thought was more accurately reflective of market conditions?
No, we did not.
Well, then how the devil can you argue prime rate is not accurate as to market conditions and not suggest any rate that you thought was more accurate?
The board gave two justifications why it was changing from...
Yes, but I'm asking you, what rate you thought was most accurate for market conditions, and you never suggested one.
We did not. The board did not say that the reason...
Your argument is we like the old Treasury rate because it's lower. That's your argument.
We like the old Treasury rate, and if we're going to go to a new rate that better reflects a market rate, the rationale the board gave for the prime rate being that rate completely fails.
It's certainly better than the Treasury rate the market rate.
If better means higher, it's higher. But the board gave two reasons for that, for doing that. It said that the prime rate correlates to market interest rates, and it says that we didn't dispute the essential reasoning, even though we gave...
But, counsel, I don't see how a comment can be persuasive in a situation like that if you don't... If you object to the rate that Service Transportation Board comes up with, but as not reflecting market conditions, and come up with no rate of your own that you think better reflects market conditions, I find it astonishing.
I understand what you're saying. We did not offer an alternative rate.
No, because you didn't want anything higher than the Treasury rate.
We told the board why its reasons for shifting to the prime rate were not appropriate, not adequate, and the board failed at all to address our arguments. They just said, we wanted to go to the
market. Well, I had a good answer, a good reason. You didn't suggest anything.
I would suggest that when an agency like the board is going to make a change like that, it has to justify itself the reasons for its change. It gave two reasons. The two reasons it gave, we addressed.
I've got you. I've got it, counsel.
I just have two quick questions for you. If we were to agree with you about the double counting and the three benchmark issue.
Yes.
Would we remand it or vacate that part of it, or and why?
I think you should vacate and remand. I think the board has not given any reason justification for adopting this new three benchmark damages model. The reason it gave
I was just asking about the double counting. That was my only question.
Okay, well, the double counting is...
We don't vacate if we think the agency can come up with a legitimate explanation of what it's done.
Fair enough. Yeah. Then perhaps you should remand, but they certainly did double count. Yeah. And they are now accuse us of not having raised the double counting below, but they didn't make the mistake until the final decision. We didn't have that opportunity.
Would you give me just a couple of sentences explaining what the double count is?
Sure. The board looked to expenses that another party in a rate case involving the Union Pacific said they had incurred for the purposes of trying their case. They explained that $2 million of that expense related to developing what's called road property investment, or RPI costs. The board then turned to, it said we're going to add that to the cost of developing road property investment in a particular 3B case. So in other words, it accounted for those costs twice without realizing, or I assume without realizing, that it had already accounted for RPI costs by referring to the cost in the first case, the U.S. Magnesium case. I don't think it was done intentionally or to be unfair, but it wasn't an arithmetic error, and it should be corrected. I would like to reserve
that.
Arithmetic error. Yeah. Why do we need to vacate as opposed to simply remand?
I should have corrected my answer and say a remand would be appropriate.
Okay.
One last question, which I reluctantly ask, is it's about the original alternative and modified ATC issue.
Yes.
I just want to know your reaction to the board's argument that all of your arguments are about original ATC and that issue had been resolved in a different case and wasn't at issue in these proceedings at all.
It was an issue in these proceedings. We made arguments here. The board said...
I know you made them, but the board said it was off the table. They never considered it one way or the other. They had rejected all of those in this other case, Western Fuels.
The board did not address our arguments why original ATC was appropriate, useful, correct. It didn't need to be changed. The board said we explained that in our Western Fuels decision. That decision, as Judge Santel knows, has been up here twice and most recently vacated and remanded and sent back to the board, making it very clear in his decision to the board.
What it's worth, I think, the petition for rehearing on Bob still pens. I don't remember. We have an update. We try to keep straight on what. Is that?
I don't know.
Is that not the case?
I'm not sure, Mr. Lightmate. He's saying it is. So.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse me. May it please the court.
You can lower the podium. No, the whole thing comes down.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Eric Light. I'm here on behalf of the Surface Transportation Board in the United States. Your Honor, this case involves the board's most recent efforts to improve its rate reasonableness procedures. In a 2007 decision affirmed by this court, the board crafted the simplified standalone cost methodology and revised its 3 benchmark methodology in order to give captive shippers some practical means of challenging their rates before the board. Unfortunately, it didn't quite work out as the board had hoped, because over the next 5 years or so, virtually no shippers actually used those methodologies. They told the board basically that the relief caps are too low, and that's one of the main obstacles. So the board responded with this rulemaking in order to try to transform those simplified methodologies from basically theoretical options to practical options that shippers could actually use. And of course, the first change was to remove the limitation on relief in simplified standalone cost methodology.
What's your response to Mr. Moses' argument that, well, look, no one's going to use full SAC anymore? All going to use the cheaper version.
The board addressed that, and I think it was in the NPRM.
Why don't you tell me the response now?
Okay. What it said was if it believes that the railroad is not sufficiently efficient, then that would be a reason to bring a full SAC case. Because that's full SAC, full standalone cost, is the only methodology that detects inefficiencies. So that would be the reason. That's what the board said.
Do you have any idea what order of magnitude inefficiencies have ever developed? In other words, are the three factors that you can raise as a shipper to challenge a rate, how often has inefficiencies been even of any significance? I think I was trying to sit down and figure out how you would ever prove that, and it seemed to me terribly difficult. So as a practical matter, how often have inefficiencies ever been relied upon?
Oh, I think they're relied upon, Your Honor, because the...
No, I mean, has the board said, okay, in cases... X amount is attributable to inefficiencies?
I don't think the board's said that, quantified it in that manner, but the parties do come in and debate whether or not...
I understand they debate. Has anybody ever figured out what the result is for inefficiencies? I mean, by anybody, I'm referring to the Surface Transportation Board.
I don't know if the board's quantified that, Your Honor.
Ever?
I don't think so.
So that insofar as you're suggesting... That's still an option. It's a chimera, isn't it?
It's what?
A chimera?
Not necessarily, no. I mean, like I was saying, the parties come in and debate how much facilities and personnel and equipment and all that stuff is needed. And sometimes the board rules in favor of the shipper, and sometimes it rules in favor of the railroad. So I think the implication is that yes, sometimes the shippers are finding inefficiencies.
Well, if the board ever never quantified it, it's very hard to point to it as precedent. But I understand. It sounds like a make weight thrown in without analysis.
Like I said, I think you know, in case after case, the parties do debate this, and the board rules sometimes that no. The railroads claim that you need X amount of this or X amount of that. It's not correct, and you need less than that. So the board does find inefficiencies. I just don't know how to quantify that for the court. Now, the board also addressed the issue of...
So if we were writing an opinion on this, agreeing with you, tell me once again what we'd say about the argument that this essentially... We would do what you just said. We would say, well, shippers would still use full SAC when they need to prove inefficiencies.
Correct, Your Honor. Correct.
We would cite the board's analysis in the rulemaking. Is that right?
That and the fact that in case after case, the board does, sometimes find inefficiencies, although it hasn't necessarily quantified them.
Uh-huh. Okay, and where would we find that in the record?
About finding inefficiencies?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Us to go read all the cases?
I was just pointing to the other cases, which are a matter of public record.
Uh-huh.
So. Now, the board did explain why it thought that this was an appropriate interpretation, because if the methodology is sufficiently reliable, there's no reason Congress would want to bar the board from using or making available such a methodology, and that's a rational explanation, and the petitioners have not shown why that's unreasonable. So we believe that the board's interpretation passes both step one and step two of Chevron. Moving on, the board also gave a rational reason in this case for removing the limitation on relief. The board explained that simplified standalone cost does a comparable job as full standalone cost of detecting whether the complaining shipper is being required to cross-subsidize parts of the network that it doesn't use. It explained about the inefficiency issue that is true, that simplified standalone cost does not allow the board to detect inefficiencies, but that's something that consistently favors the railroads if it favors anyone. It's a systematic bias in favor of the railroads. So that's not a reason for including a limitation on relief. The only thing that the petitioners point to is the use of the uniform rail costing system to develop operating expenses, and the board explained that as well. It said the uniform rail costing system is this general purpose costing system for all regulatory purposes. And it cited a discussion in the 2007 Simplified Standards decision where the board specifically explained why the use of IRCs to develop operating expenses in the simplified methodology should be a reasonable approximation, even if the traffic group includes high-value or high-cost traffic. So in our view, the board gave a rational explanation, and that's all that was required. Moving on to the unless the court has any questions about simplified standalone costs, I'd like to move on to the three benchmark issue.
Yeah, would you start with the double counting issue?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Sorry, David, I didn't hear what you
said. I asked him to start with the double counting.
Oh, yeah.
The board's position is that the double count was small. The reason we say that is because it was small.
And the you conceded the double count.
There was some double count. The reason we say that it was small is because the board, in the 2007 Simplified Standards decision, had massively simplified the road property investment inquiry. It made major simplifications in 10 out of the 11 RPI expense categories, and the petitioners don't dispute that. And what they do try to do is to claim and suggest that it's a large double count. But
why shouldn't we send it back to fix the double count, regardless of what that is?
Your Honor, I think it's important to remember what the board's task when it's setting a relief limit is. The board is essentially engaged in making a policy judgment as to when simplified standalone cost is too costly. The fact is, there is no single cost to litigate a simplified standalone cost case because they were all going to be different.
That's my estimate anyway. You had only one comparable to go on. Is that correct?
In the record here?
Yeah.
Yes. The board relied on there was only one shipper ever to have brought a simplified standalone cost case, and they came in and testified as to what, and it didn't even go to the final decision.
That's U.S. Magnesium?
That's U.S. Magnesium.
Well, but look what they say about this issue. They say at Joint Appendix 148, their comment says, legal and expert costs quickly escalated due to the complex nature of the replacement cost railroad calculation. Quickly escalated. And I didn't see anything in your brief at all challenging that.
Well, that's very vague, Your Honor, about
quickly escalate? I mean, this is the testimony, this is the comment that not only don't the board challenge it, but this was a very comment that the board relied on for its estimate of the cost of simplified SAC under the old rule. So the board relied on this, but it says quickly escalated. So given what it says there and that you don't respond to it, I can't. It's hard for me to understand why your answer to Judge Sintel would be, well, we can still continue to assume that it's minimal. It says quickly escalated.
Right, but we don't know how far it escalated. And
yeah, but there's no response in the record. I mean, if the board had responded to this and said, well, look, quickly escalated meant that, yeah, it quickly went from $1 to $10, then you'd have something to go on. But we don't have a response. All we have in the record is this.
But what we do know, Your Honor, is that the board had significantly simplified the RPI inquiry under the old rules. And so to the extent
RPI?
Road property investment. I'm sorry, Your Honor. And so any double count is going to be a small portion of the total road property investment expenses. And the petitioners made no effort to quantify the double count. And that's important because, again, there is no single cost to litigate a simplified standalone cost case. And so as a result, what that means is that coming up with a relief limit is, as this court said in the appeal of the 2007 standards, that is essentially a policy judgment on the board's part as to when simplified standalone cost is too costly.
But if there's a mathematical error in making that policy decision, why would it not be appropriate for us to vacate and remand it for correcting that?
Because
considering in light of that mathematical error.
Because the board The board's, first of all, the board's decision is presumed correct, and so the petitioner.
We know that. We're past that.
The petitioners have to demonstrate.
Or the board has, or the petitioners demonstrated that there's a mathematical error.
Yeah, but they have not demonstrated how significant a mathematical error.
The board hasn't either, has it?
That's correct, Your Honor. But again, the best way the presumption comes in.
We can't affirm the board on a basis other than what the board has said.
Right, but that's where the presumption comes in. It's their burden to show that it's a significant double count.
Even if it's based on
mathematical error. Your Honor, again, as I was saying, the.
Is your argument a harmless error? You didn't make that argument.
Well, our argument is that the board's numerical figure.
You're not making a harmless error argument now, are you? Because you didn't make it before.
I guess not, Your Honor. I would call it a, you know, the argument is that this court's standard for a for setting a numerical level is that it only has to fall within a zone of reasonableness. So they have to show that the double count brought it outside of a zone of reasonableness, and they made no effort to demonstrate that.
But they made a comment to the board, and the board didn't show that it was within the zone of reasonableness, right? Or didn't say what it was. Right.
So who made a comment?
Wasn't there a comment in the proceeding which the board did not respond on this thing?
That there was a double count? No, there was no suggestion at the board level. So in our view, if it's a double count, if it's a de minimis double count, then it would not be appropriate to send it back.
How do we know it's de minimis? I guess that's what I'm trying to ask.
Well, again, we don't know it's significant either.
Now, are you saying we should not consider it because it was not raised before the board?
That was one of our arguments, yes, Your Honor. But I think the main point is that on this appeal, the petitioners should have made some effort to quantify the
significance,
exactly,
of double counting.
They do point to some evidence in the record on which the board relied in the 2007 simplified standards case to suggest how many hours they thought the board had figured the simplified road property investment inquiry would, how many hours that would take, but they made no effort to quantify how much that would result in terms of fees, and they could have tried to do that.
And what's your response to Mr. Moses' response to my question about original ATC?
Can you remind me again?
Original ATC.
Which ATC?
Original alternative.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I violated the rule.
I forget what ATC is.
As I understood the position in your brief, maybe I'm wrong. I thought your position was all of their arguments were about original ATC. Right?
Correct. All the arguments made.
About original, and that wasn't an issue here any longer. That was off the table, right?
The board had already decided all that.
Yeah.
So, in the board's view, it was moving from modified ATC
to alternative
ATC.
And that
average
was
total cost.
Yes, thank
I'm
you.
Sorry.
Thank you.
And that was all the board was considering at the time, right? That's your theory?
Correct, Your Honor. But even if the board had to address their arguments on original ATC, we submit that the board referenced the Western Fuels litigation in this decision. Mm-hmm. It referenced the discussion of why original ATC was flawed. And, I mean, that, I think, is an implicit incorporation of that discussion. And at a minimum, I think this court can conclude that it's based on the circumstances of this case, that it's unmistakable why the board didn't accept these very same arguments that it had just rejected. So,
anything else?
I have one question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, I see that the Justice Department is on the brief. Now, with respect to some of the issues raised concerning acronyms and other difficulties in understanding briefs, did the Justice Department lawyers actually go over the brief?
Yes, Your Honor.
They're supposed to, this is the Civil Division, right? They're supposed to be particularly expert on understanding our rules.
It's actually the Antitrust Division.
It was the Antitrust Division, I'm sorry. Well, they're supposed to be expert in understanding our rules, too. They didn't say anything about acronyms?
No, Your Honor.
We'll
all try to do better next time.
All right.
Anything else?
No.
Okay, thank you. Did Mr. Moats have any time left?
Mr. Moats has a minute and
Okay, you can take two.
Judge Tatel, I will try to be brief. First, quickly, Judge Santel, on the double count issue, we could not have challenged that before the board because I thought I said this, and I'm sorry if I wasn't clear. The error was made in the final decision. We never saw that until the final.
Did you seek reconsideration?
No, we didn't. We didn't, but we're not required to. It was just
we know
did
why.
You seek reconsideration?
We did not seek reconsideration.
We know why, don't we?
No, sir, we did not.
No.
You have not at any point raised that question before in any fashion.
We didn't have an opportunity to until
right.
The final
was the computation in which the double counting allegedly occurred or did occur, was that a surprise when it came out, or had you seen that?
No, it was very much a surprise.
And so that again, was not in the evidentiary record before.
I do not ascribe any ill motive to the board. I think it was honestly an arithmetic.
What about his argument that you've never shown the significance of the double counting?
The significance is obvious, Judge Silverman.
Is it?
Yes, because they pick the new level of relief, you know, $5 million. By adding up these numbers and saying that's roughly what it costs to try one of these cases, and that's what they're using as a benchmark.
But at most, that's a cap. That's not the actual, that does not dictate any result in any case.
Absolutely correct. It is
a cap.
It's a limit or a cap on relief for using that methodology.
Right.
If I may, you know, we didn't talk at all about.
Can you tell us why it would be significant to anything, whether they double counted something in coming up with that?
Yes, because before the cap was $1 million. Now there's $5 million because they did the double count.
Maybe well, now the double counting doesn't contribute to the $1 million to $5
million. No, that doesn't cause $1 million to $5 million. You're not even contending that in that count. That doesn't get close to a straight-faced test to say that causes the whole increase.
Doesn't it just relate to the additional $2 million?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Now, does that mean the cap ought to be $3 million? I don't know, but we ought to address that if we go back with the board. We haven't talked about the fact that in 1995, when Congress added 10701D3, the Senate said specifically the committee does not intend to erode the constrained market pricing principles adopted by the ICC for full standalone cost presentations.
Congress didn't enact that language, did it?
That's in the Senate report. It's not,
right, not enacted.
No, but it's legislative history.
Right. It's only legislative history.
And I would submit there couldn't be a greater erosion of the principles than a complete elimination of the relief gap. And the other point I would make.
Well, what about counsel's, the board's position that.
I'm sorry?
What about the board's, their argument that, look, the board's shippers will still use full standalone cost analysis?
In the case in which they want to prove inefficiencies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, you were right on, Judge Silverman. There hasn't been a case, at least in the last 25 years of ever, that invoked the inefficiency constraint and the constrained market pricing principles as the standard in a case. It hasn't happened. But second, both the standalone cost test and the simplified standalone cost test, in a way, permit the shipper to, you will, write out inefficiencies because they are permitted to exclude facilities on the existing railroad that they think don't contribute to their services or contribute to their ability to win a rate case. That sounds a little strange, perhaps, but under standalone cost, they are allowed to design the least cost, most efficient system that they think will provide them service, appropriate service, and not include portions of the railroad whose rates they're challenging, portions of it that they say don't benefit them. I would submit that's a way of eliminating inefficiencies. It's not an invocation of the so-called management inefficiency constraint, which was way back at the time of the passage of the Staggers Act. There was some concern that some railroad managements were perhaps not managing the properties as efficiently as they should, and shippers convinced Congress to give them a chance to prove that. It's never really happened. I would, with respect, like to draw the Court's attention to the brief of the United States and the STB in the case of CSX versus STB. This is the 2009 case appealing the simplified standalone cost guidelines first time around. Where they're in their brief, the government's brief, they said, quote, the agency was therefore properly concerned that it not open the doors too broadly by setting the relief limits too high. If it had raised the relief limits as dramatically as urged by the shippers, then complainants who might not prevail at all under the more precise full SAC test or the simplified SAC test would have greater incentive to roll the dice and seek relief under a less precise and simplified alternative. That's page 45.
I know. That just suggests that they changed their policy views, doesn't it? By they, I'm referring to the STB.
If their policy is that the simplest methodology can be made available for the largest amount of recoverable damages, in other words, the shippers can go ahead and roll the dice using the less inefficient method, I would submit that is not what statute contemplates and is certainly not what the board itself has said time and again it was intending to do when it first adopted simplified guidelines.
I'm finished.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Case is submitted.